You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. A quick thank you to our sponsor, Wise Fish. For more than 30 years, Wise Fish has helped seafood businesses simplify the way they work. From aquaculture and wild catch to processing and sales, Wise Fish brings everything together in one integrated platform. Find out more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
So where in the world is the Undercurrent News team this week? Well, we are racking up those airline miles. Undercurrent had not one, not two, but three live blogs going this week.
That's right. We were very busy. We had three reporters, Tom Seaman, Masahiko Takeuchi, and Dan Gibson, reporting from the annual Groundfish Forum taking place in Tokyo, Japan this year. Plus, we had Louis Harkel reporting from the annual conference of the Marine Ingredients Organization, IFO, and also taking place in Tokyo. And in Sao Paulo, Brazil, Maddie Marighetti was reporting from the fourth edition of the Seafood Show Latin America.
And we actually got Maddie to check in with us, so take a listen.
Good evening, everyone. I am in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where I attended the Seafood Show Latin America. And it was interesting. It turns out that Japanese cuisine is everywhere in Brazil, and it actually transformed the entire seafood market in the country. I interviewed Roberto Kikui Mai from the Federation of Industries of Sao Paulo, and he told me that Japanese food has been a major force behind the growing demand for seafood and higher quality fish in Brazil. He said that what started as a niche mainly within the Japanese community here in Brazil has become a national craze. And it's true, there are so many Japanese restaurants all over the city. Think back to the 1980s and 1990s. That's when the Chilean salmon hit the scene, making sushi and sashimi more accessible to everyday Brazilians. And so from Sao Paulo, the trend has spread fast. And today, believe it or not, there are more Japanese restaurants and steakhouses across Brazil. It's crazy. The boom didn't just change menus. It reshaped the industry, according to Imai. Local fish like tilapia are now being used for sashimi and ceviche, while freshness and quality became must-haves across the board. Some salmon and tuna, well, especially salmon, but also tuna and other species are key. And more recently, Japanese food in Brazil has developed its own identity, kind of Japanese-Brazilian fusion that mixes traditional techniques with local ingredients like mango, cream cheese, and tropical fish. According to Imai, this cultural blend has not only boosted seafood consumption, but also helped the local fishing industry survive these tough export times with the recent U.S. reciprocal tariffs that for Brazil are at 50%. And as Brazilians become more health conscious, seafood, especially Japanese inspired dishes, is taking center stage. So all the local distributors are really looking at the domestic market. In Brazil, about 220 million people live. And so it's a huge market. It's the largest country in Latin America. And definitely Japanese cuisine has really helped to drive up consumption of seafood in the country. So I guess this was the main trend, and otherwise high cod prices or high prices of white fish are reshaping the market as well. So this was another topic of discussion during the show, with distributors and importers commenting that consumers are reacting to high prices, but because Brazilians really love cod, they still buy it, but maybe they buy it in smaller sizes, or they shift species. So instead of buying cod, they would buy different species of white fish that are less expensive. And also another interesting point at the show was that Norway has recently signed a free trade agreement. Well, actually EFTA, which includes Norway, has recently signed free trade agreement with Mercosur, which Brazil is part of. And once it's ratified, this agreement, a free trade agreement, will allow some species, some types of seafood, including salmon, to enter Brazil and the other countries that are part of Mercosur without duties. Although this won't be immediate for all the products, but it might take between from 0 and 15 years. For some products is immediate, for other products is 4 to 8 or 15 years. But basically, Norwegians were very excited about the agreement because for them, it will create new opportunities in Brazil. And of course, there were quite a few Chilean companies attending the show because Chile is the largest supplier of salmon to Brazil at the moment. The market has grown exponentially in recent years and is a very important market for Chile. So, I mean, salmon price in Brazil and globally have been at the lowest level since the pandemic. But it has increased, Chilean salmon prices to Brazil have increased this week and they're expected to increase further next week. And there is expectations that salmon prices will continue increasing, especially at the end of November and December due to a reduction of production from Norway and strong demand ahead of Christmas.
I feel like we say this often, but it's true. The timing for these events couldn't be any better with what's going on in the industry. Logistically, it was tough to get a team in Tokyo on the pod this week, but we'll tease a bit. Tom got the scoop on a story that I know you've reported a little bit too, Amanda. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's massive solicitation for Alaska pollock products.
Massive. You could say that again. 43 million pounds, which the USDA paid a combined $84.2 million for.
Like I said, massive. So Tom Zaffiro, CEO of Channel Fish Processing, one of the three winning bidders on the USDA contract, told Undercurrent that the USDA's bid cleared out any remaining PBO pollock block stocks. And because of that, Zaffiro said it's making the 2026 ACE season pricing discussions harder for U.S. buyers. Meanwhile, he said that record high price levels for cod and haddock are causing U.S. customers to walk away. Full story is a must read, so link in the show notes.
But of course, the big story from the Groundfish Forum is the supply projections for next year's global whitefish harvest volumes. The annual forecast expects to see total wild whitefish volumes drop by another 145,000 metric tons next year to 6.5 million metric tons, a downturn driven primarily by the Atlantic cod reduction and an anticipated 100,000 ton cut to Alaskan pollock harvests in North America. Atlantic cod quotas for Norway and Russia have yet to be set in the Barents Sea. So the Groundfish Forum's conservative outlook is that total catches will be cut in the region by another 22%. That means the combined cod haul of both countries is forecast to barely clear 250,000 tons. Broken down further, Undercurrent's Dan Gibson reports that Norway is forecast to drop 25% to 131,000 tons, which he says represents less than half of what the country had been landing as recently as 2023. Russian cod harvests are projected to fall by a further 21%, and a link to the full deep dive from Dan can be found in the show notes.
Moving on to shellfish, a big Indiana food conglomerate is set to acquire assets of bankrupt U.S. lobster processor Cozy Harbor. Our editorial director, Cliff White, broke the story this week that Aquashell USA will pay $6.5 million for Cozy Harbor's assets, including inventory, equipment, leases, and processing permits for its Portland and Tenet's Harbor facilities. And if you're not familiar with Aquashell, the owner is listed in the agreement as Hal P. Harlan, one of the owners of the Harlan Development Company, which is a privately owned real estate development and management company based in Avon, Indiana, and housed under the umbrella of the Harlan Companies. That includes Harlan Foods, which operates a wholesale baking operation, but is also a diversified food manufacturer with lobster harvesting and processing operations. The deal, which is pending final approval by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Maine, appears to preserve Cozy Harbor's well-known lobster processing and distribution business, which has operated for more than 40 years and supplies both domestic and international markets.
Now for our weekly radioactive shrimp update. Japan has become the first country to follow the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and require precautionary radiation checks on Indonesian shrimp. So in a directive dated October 10th, Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare instructed all quarantine offices to require importers to conduct radiation testing on shrimp products originating in Indonesia, including processed foods using shrimp as a main ingredient, as well as spices such as clove. And the notice cites information from the FDA, which, as we all know, placed Indonesian firm Bahari Makmur Sejati, BMS, on import alert in August after CS-137 was detected. So the Japanese directive does not impose a blanket ban or formal certification requirement. Instead, the ministry is requiring importers to submit radiation test results with each shipment from BMS and Natural Java Spice, that's the spice company for the cloves. So testing is mandatory for customs clearance from those companies. For other Indonesian shrimp, importers are only encouraged to conduct periodic voluntary testing and retain records when filing import declarations.
Meanwhile, in the U.S., shrimp importers caught a break as the Indonesian government and U.S. FDA struck an agreement to allow thousands of containers already on the water to enter the country without meeting the standards set by October 31st certification mandate. Shrimp containers on the water before October 13th, 2025 can still enter the U.S. despite the import alert that was issued on October 3rd. Those arriving after the October 31st deadline can enter pending they pass the FDA's alternative screening procedure. So that was some good news.
I'll take it. Now, before we continue, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wisefish. Running a seafood business means dealing with a lot of moving parts. Farms, catches, production, sales, logistics, each often has its own systems and spreadsheets. Wisefish brings it all together. Purpose-built for aquaculture and seafood companies, Wisefish connects biological and financial data so you can see costs, yields, and profitability clearly. The platform tracks feed, treatments, biomass growth, mortality, labor and equipment costs, then ties it all to harvest and sales planning. Instead of spending time reconciling reports and checking for errors, your team can focus on what matters, making smart, timely decisions that drive growth. Trusted by seafood businesses worldwide, Wisefish is how the industry moves from guesswork to visibility. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. All right, we've got a couple other UCN friends joining us on the pod this week to keep the shrimp talk going. Gary Morrison and Jason Huffman. Jason, set the stage for us. What's going on?
Well, I'm just going to say, hug a shrimp importer if you know one, because they are dealing with some difficult times. We've talked many times here about the crazy tariff situation, which has hit all of the major shrimp producing countries. The worst, of course, is India, which started in April with a new 10% tariff. The same rate applied to most nations' goods, but then saw that tariff rate escalate to 25% in early August, and then again to 50% in late August. In particular, President Trump has complained about India buying Russian oil, and that seems to be the sticking point. I'm just anxious for the U.S. government shutdown to be over so we can start seeing what those higher tariffs did to the import of Indian shrimp in the months of August and September, because I think we all expect to see a dramatic drop-off once those tariff rates hit. What we do know is that the 10% rate alone made Indian shrimp the most expensive between April and July, costing importers an additional $54.3 million in tariffs. That's largely due, of course, to the heavy amount of dollars that were spent on Indian shrimp during that period, $894.2 million, which was 34% more than that same three-month period in 2024. India is the U.S.'s largest source of shrimp, counts for about 40% of all the imports, and shrimp importers have been dying for good news about this situation, any word that a deal is in the works. And then just such a word came on Tuesday of this week when the Indian business newspaper, The Mint, reported that the Indian government was talking to the Trump administration about a deal that would bring the tariff down to 15 to 16%. The Mint said it heard this from three unnamed sources. They said a deal was expected at the end of the month during the ASEAN conference in Malaysia, October 26th to 28th. We don't have further confirmation from any other news outlet or source on this, but we do know that Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi spoke on Tuesday about trade, and there were several positive sounding tweets afterwards. And we are keeping an eye out for more news. The only additional detail we've seen so far is the report that Modi will not be attending the ASEAN conference in person, but via video. So that rules out an in-person Trump-Modi get-together, and that may or may not maybe hurt the chances of a deal getting done there. Anyhow, we've got Gary Morrison here, who is our top shrimp expert. I would love to hear more from him on what he sees happening in the U.S. shrimp import market as a result of these tariffs and what the removal or reduction of these tariffs could mean.
Yeah, so thanks, Jason. I think, you know, let's start with, you know, my point of view. And I think you talked about you expect August, September, a big drop in Indian shrimp to the U.S. And I'm going to present a counterfactual to the group here because, you know, where do you think the U.S. is going to get their shrimp, right? So India has some tariffs, but some of the Asian source nations have, you know, some bigger tariffs as well. You're talking Indonesia, Vietnam, and places like that. And it's also about product form, right? So the U.S. consumer is really looking for convenience. The share of peeled shrimp entering the United States has steadily increased, and that has only exaggerated since COVID. Right prior to COVID, it was about a 40% share of total imports were peeled shrimp. Now it's over 50%. So, you know, 50% for 2024 and 51% year to date in 2025. So what that's telling you is the U.S. consumer wants a certain type of shrimp. Now, if you look at some of the areas where they can source that shrimp from, it's really India and Ecuador are the top two nations, right? And Ecuador has a capacity problem. So I don't expect shrimp imports to drop significantly from India in terms of share of overall imports for those 2 months. But what are the tariffs doing? I mean, that's a good question. I think the industry will certainly be relieved if this deal goes through, right, and tariffs are reduced to that level that we're talking about. You know, prices have rallied roughly on a P&D 21% since the Liberation Day of April 2nd. So right in line with some of the tariff rates that we're seeing on some of these nations, not quite as high as some. And what that told us is throughout the supply chain, that importers were dollar cost averaging their prices. So they had some cheaper inventory here in the U.S. As their replacement became a little bit more expensive, they would edge prices up. Jason, I know we talked about it. You wrote a great article how most of that cheap inventory is now gone, right? So importers have been raising their prices slightly to try to counteract some of those increased costs that they're seeing. But the other situation that importers are certainly scared of or have them awake at night if the tariff rates drop. So yeah, that's good overall. But what are they going to do with that expensive inventory that they have here in the country now, right? So when their consumers hear that tariff rates drop, they're going to want a reduction in shrimp prices almost instantaneously. But the inventory here has a higher cost associated with it. So I would expect the exact opposite to happen, right? So prices are not going to drop as in lockstep with that decline in tariff rates, but importers are going to have to try to dollar cost average down. And at some point they may have to take losses. And we saw this, you know, right after COVID, when there was an influx of shrimp here into the United States in 2021, we had almost 2 billion pounds of shrimp imported into the United States. It took almost 2 years, and it was expensive shrimp, right? Because everybody was fighting for it. It took almost 2 years to draw down that inventory and to reduce the price over that time. And then we hit multi-year lows, and we've since bounced back here. So I think we're trying to reset the equilibrium, and I think any good news is positive long term, but there are going to be some blips in the short term as well.
I remember some of that stuff from the pandemic and the expensive inventory that suddenly got replaced by much cheaper product that they then had to get rid of the expensive inventory somehow, and companies sat on it. I remember with swimming crab, for example, I remember that was a big issue. They had to sit on that inventory, and there was nothing really to hope for, because eventually, I mean, you think you're going to sell it eventually? Maybe not. You know, maybe the price never comes up to that point and you're stuck.
Yeah, I mean, they may take losses, but it's how do they want to take those losses if that's the case, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of importers, at least in the shrimp industry that you know, I deal with, took them over a longer period of time. That eased, you know, the gross numbers, the gross losses on those numbers. And, you know, it was just about dollar cost averaging and accounting. You know, was it, you know, how they want to account for it, first in, first out, last in, first out, or overall average. And again, every business has different decisions to make and different shareholders to appease. So I think that, you know, while, again, it's welcome relief, you know, any reduction in tariffs, I think short term, certainly some factors to consider for these shrimp importers here in the U.S.
This is an excellent illustration of how this stuff is never on a straight line. It's always like there's always these layers and complications that you need someone like Gary here to kind of, you know, give you some background on an understanding of, because like I jumped to the conclusion, you know, that, you know, the tariffs would drop, the tariffs would go up. That would lead to a reduction in the import. They would drop, they would import more, but it's not that straightforward, is it?
No, I mean, it's relative, you know, to other, you know, source countries, right? So, I mean, really the top four countries, India, Ecuador, Indonesia, Vietnam, you know, they account for the bulk of shrimp imports. So if, you know, tariffs on one country are higher, it's just the relative number, the comparative number versus, you know, the absolute number. So we talk about 50% tariff on India. Yes, absolutely. That's high. But the spread between India and some of the other Asian countries is pretty minimal. So I think that's where, you know, the compression of tariffs is certainly what needs to be looked at, and not just the absolute number in a vacuum. And then certainly Ecuador, you know, had the lowest tariff assessed to that country. And because of capacity issues, because they saw so much more business being thrown their way, or at least looked at them, you know, they went straight up to the Asian tariff because they had no need to discount product to U.S. importers because they had that clear advantage.
Gary, I talked to an importer who was really angry with the Ecuadorians for doing that. He's like, what are they doing? Why are they doing that to us? You know, and the Ecuadorians are just playing the game. You know, they're just, if they can get more for their shrimp and they've got a capacity issue.
Right. I mean, that's what I mean. Ultimately, right, we talk about tariffs and we talk about a lot of other things. A lot of times it just comes to supply and demand. People were looking for shrimp. They weren't able to produce in excess of what people are looking for. So they had the willingness to go right up to that price that people were willing to pay.
Now, if you cannot get enough of this conversation between Gary and Jason, if you can't get enough more trade talk, we actually have something coming up next week that you're going to want to put on your calendar. So, Jason, you're taking on hosting duties for Undercurrent's webinar all about tariffs. Care to give our listeners a tease of why they should register?
Oh, yes, Amanda. Thanks for the opportunity to pitch. Undercurrent News has organized a free 45-minute webinar for October 30th at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time called The Real Impact of Trump's Tariffs on U.S. Seafood Prices. And Gary, Lauren, and Ben Fisher will all be in this conversation and sharing some of their brilliant insights on different seafood markets. And you just heard a little taste of it right there with Gary knows about shrimp. We'll be talking about a bunch of other species. I highly encourage everyone to tune in.
Agreed. Well, on to our fun stories of the week. Super excited to talk about this one because I was really hoping there would be some sort of crossover here. But before Netflix could even get their act together and get a K-pop Demon Hunters toy line on the shelves, a Korean noodle seafood snack brand called Nongshim has managed to ink a deal to get the characters from the animated film on its packaging.
And here I thought a soda company would be the first one to jump on the K-pop Demon Hunters bandwagon because the soda pop song.
I know, but I had a feeling there would be like a focus, you know, like on food, because in the film, you know, the girls, right, they love to eat. They've got their ramen.
Yeah.
And then like when they're like off on tour, they got like they come to like the couch with like that whole plate of food. And there's definitely like sushi on there. There's kimbap. It's all these like traditional Korean foods. Somebody said that there are shrimp crackers on here, which is how I'm getting into this whole story here. So earlier
tied
this
in
month,
Amanda.
Yeah, tied in. We're getting there. Again, hop on this train. We're going around. So earlier this month, Nongshim hosted a special K-pop Demon Hunters pop-up event in New York City's Times Square to give fans of the musical movie phenomenon a taste of its new collaborative products. And that includes the company's staple product, its Shenryaman noodles. But most importantly, because it's seafood related, like I said, the collaboration also includes Nongshim's popular shrimp crackers, which are considered the company's flagship snack with annual sales exceeding $70 billion.
The seafood snack era has finally arrived.
Finally. All right. So one last fun story. Do you watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
You know it.
Well, every year there's always a new float to look forward to. And this year, Alaska Seafood is getting a little bit of the spotlight thanks to the Holland America Line's new Alaska Cruise Line float. So the cruise ship company headquartered in the U.S. city of Seattle, Washington, it wrapped up its 2025 Alaska cruise season earlier this month, completing 117 voyages. And can you guess how much seafood? You could possibly guess how much seafood would be served on this.
No.
It's 125,000 pounds of Alaska seafood served over the course of these 117 voyages. Is that nuts? That's a lot of seafood. Nice. Yeah. And what's cool is that Holland America is known for emphasizing its seafood with its global fresh fish program, which aims to source fresh fish from port to plate in less than 48 hours. And it's committed to serving only certified sustainable Alaska seafood when it's on the specific cruise. So, and its commitment to serving only certified sustainable Alaska seafood will be on display for all to see during this year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which will take place in New York, New York on Thursday, November 27th.
Did this story come with an invitation for us to join them on the float?
Me and a plus one. So I was going to invite Gary.
Oh, stop it.
No, but that would be very cool. It's just fun to see. I always look for like seafood wherever I am now. Like I just, you know, and so if more people, you know, think, I don't even know how many people watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Everybody has it on in the background.
Yeah. So it's like, it'll be fun to see, you know, to see some fish up there. I wonder what they're going to do. I wonder if it's going to be just like some images of salmon, or I wonder if there's going to be like dancers holding up like cardboard salmon, like dancing through the streets of New York with their.
Well, I'm signing us up. We will gladly
dance the streets with.
On the float. We will gladly dress up as Alaskan pollock or crab, whatever you want, dancing down the streets of New York. See, like the people need it.
Well, that does it for us this week. I'm going to cut Lauren off there. But before we go, a final word from our sponsor, Wise Fish. From egg to plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses in aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies worldwide, including Tassel and Niels Spare, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and make smarter financial decisions. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.